G'day guys and girls, and welcome to another episode of the Scouting Australia podcast, powered by Australian Property Scout Buyers Agency. I've got back in the studio. He's back from the distance. He's been off a long way away. Mm-hmm. He's been overseas, taking his lovely lady on a nice overseas trip. Mate, big Jimmy Ibrahim, the silver dog himself. How are you, buddy? Welcome back.
Mate, it's so good to be back. We're back. The band's back together.
The boys are back in town. Wow.
It's so good to be back up here on the Gold Coast. Beautiful. Look at this. You could be in Miami. Mate, it looks like
Mate, it's a very good day. It's turned it on. What was the difference in Melbourne when you flew out this morning and you came in?
Mate, don't knock Melbourne. We've had some pretty good weather of late.
Have you?
Yeah, 30 degrees every day for more than 2 days.
Wow.
So
what a run.
We're breaking records.
What a run.
Yeah, what a run.
Yeah.
So
beautiful.
It's good to be up here. Good to be back in the studio. Mate, good to see you.
It's good to have you here, mate. I was very excited when you walked into the cafe this morning. I think the whole cafe jumped because I was just like, ah, Jimmy.
Mate, it was
so excited to see you.
You know what? When I saw you,
I
don't remember noticing a few little grey hairs on your head, but how times have changed. It's only been about a month and I've seen there's a few little sprouts.
Yeah, I think the last time you were up here, you must have given me a bit of a hair transplant or something while I was sleeping. I thought it was a bit creepy with you sleeping on the same roof. But
you were the little spoon though.
Yeah, I would. Mate, you're a hawker's ear. Different generation.
So there's a few little grey sprouts. Yep. No, that's all right. Welcome to the grey club.
Thanks, mate.
But it's good to be back. Did you miss me?
I didn't, but I'm looking forward to recording. No, I did, mate. I did. Hence the whole cafe jumping this morning when I saw you. So anyway, mate, moving on. Man, first topic, I want to get straight into it, buddy. I know we need a chit chat, but we can save that for later.
Absolutely.
Man, I've had so many people messaging me lately, which is weird because I've never really been asked it all that much. Mm. But there's so many people hitting me up at the moment. You know, clients that have had great experience, people have made great money out of these deals. And they're like, can you kind of explain a bit in detail or like equity? How do I use it? Different questions that was really coming around it. So I wanted to record an app, man. First one off the rank for you and I jumping together again, man. Equity explained.
I like that. You know what? It's funny you should say that about equity.
You don't understand it either?
No, well.
I thought you were
off. He started already. He's off and running.
He's off and running.
But do you remember those old
silver
ads?
Dog's still in the gates.
So you're probably too young, but do you remember the ads when for CBA and they used to have, oh, it's equity, mate. Equity.
No, I don't.
You don't remember that?
Was that in the 80s or? I don't remember that
You're
one.
Still in nappies probably.
Yeah, that probably, I wasn't even born in the 80s, mate. But
so. Well, the grey hairs don't tell. Nah, but it was all about using equity for certain reasons.
Yes.
So I think there's been a lot of confusion for a very long time about what is good equity, what is bad equity, or in terms of how do you use it in terms of your application. So, and I get a lot of people asking me with equity. So, but how does that work? So if I buy one, what do you mean? And let's face it, a lot of people, if they haven't done property, where would you hear the word equity before? You never come across the word.
It's not terribly common, no. It's not, mate. Great point. First one. Probably the only
You're
one
welcome.
Today, but
all right,
thanks,
my work
buddy.
Is done. Thank you very much. I'll catch you guys. So what about if I can ask you, just to start everyone off then,
okay,
what is, like, let's just play real, make it simple, right? Especially for our producer who's a bit slow.
I'm going to dumb it down to Jimmy himself. Dummy's God, yes.
What is equity? Okay. Give us the bare bones.
Easiest way to describe equity.
Yes.
The equity is the difference between the value of a property and then the debt that you carry on that property.
Okay.
So easy example, you got a $400,000 investment, you got $300,000 worth of debt on it, you have $100,000 in equity in that property.
Can't get much easier than that.
Done, mate.
Right. So,
do you understand that one?
Thank you very much. I think that's very clear.
No,
that's very clear. So, then what element of that is usable equity? Because when people buy a home,
let's use
the same example, but then when they want to use that, people say, well, you got this amount of equity to use. So, does that mean people have 100 grand to use as equity?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great point, right? So, depending on the LVR that you're working at, so the loan to value ratio, so against the property that you're wanting to use. In that exact scenario, if you were using an 80% LVR, right? 80% against the purchase price, is $320,000. So in this scenario, you would have $20,000 between the 300 grand and the 320,000. You have $20,000 there of usable equity.
Okay.
If you're pushing things a little bit harder and you're talking, say a 90% lend, 88 plus LMI, let's just round it to the 90%, that's 360,000. So you're 360 on that of your $400,000 property at a 90% LVR. You've currently got $300,000 debt on it. That's 60 grand you can pull out. There's $60,000 there of usable equity. Taking into account, you might have to pay a small top-up LMI component, which is your lender's mortgage insurance for going over your 80%. You might have to pay $1,000 or so there, but you essentially got around about that $60,000 of usable equity that you can pull out and roll into another deal.
Okay. Now, at which point though, because some people are thinking, all right, well, hold on. You mentioned 80% and 90%.
Yes.
A lot of the banks will only want you to have usable equity up to 80%, right? So which times should you use 80% or 90% in terms of usable equity?
So it always comes down to like your risk profile and where you're at and what you've done. One of the best parts is, or like if you started out and you've had lower capital, or you've started, you know, you want to stretch your deposits. I know we did this within your own journey and your own portfolio. When we got started together, you wanted to stretch all the capital you had as far as you could. So we did everything 88 plus LMI, call it 90%.
Until the bank, one of the banks screwed me over.
That's it.
Can we say them or will we get sued?
Probably wouldn't say who it is.
Okay.
It was an Australian bank.
Even the initials?
No, definitely not. Okay. Anyway. So in that scenario, when you've gone and bought at 90%, most banks will allow you to lend back up to the 90 again because you've bought at 90. Most banks will allow you to lend back up to the 90 with only a small top-up amount of LMI. So it can actually be a really, really good strategic way to build and scale a portfolio quite quickly with a smaller deposit amount and be able to keep stretching it in that scenario as well. So I know a lot of people have done this. I've done this myself as well. And the top-up amount, especially with your mainstream lenders, is typically marginal. It's normally cash. There was a period there where CBA had the capped amount of $1,200. So you pull out 100 grand, it was literally a capped amount for that top up amount. Yeah, it was awesome.
Even if you went above 80%.
Yeah, so let's say you were at 90.
Yeah.
You purchased at 90.
Yeah.
It was a top up from 90 to 90. So it wasn't like 80 to 90.
Okay.
That scenario is a different scenario, different game, right? But 90 to 90, that most banks will just have a top up LMI amount, and really, like, you're just going to pay it on that very small amount anyway.
Would some banks though charge you LMI twice?
So you are the top up.
Yeah,
it is being charged twice.
Okay, so you are getting.
Do you mean on the full loan amount?
If you're recycling the equity back up to 90%.
No. Okay. Actually, man, that's a great point to make. So majority of the time, you're not refinancing the entire loan. You're doing an equity release.
Okay, good point.
This is a good little avenue to run down there. So a lot of the time you wouldn't be going from a 300 and now it's a $360,000 loan. You typically retain the bulk of the loan being a 300K loan, and then you're taking that secondary loan on top. It's like an equity release top up loan of say the 60.
Which is very different to refinancing the loan.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So that's a really important point for all the listeners.
But it will always depend as well if you're staying with the same lender or changing lenders. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time in this scenario, people will be shopping lenders. Oh, but I can save, half a percent or 0.3% of changing lenders in terms of a rate. Let's say the vals were the same, but like, you're going to have to pay full freight LMI again, moving over to them. So it almost always makes more sense just to keep it with them, just to get the equity release top-up loan.
Okay.
And then play with that. And if you just let me go on for one sec here again, let's say you did that scenario, I'll play it out. Let's say you pull out 60K and you go buy another property with your 60 grand deposit. Then let's say in the next 12, 24 months, you get another 100 grand's worth of growth and your $400,000 property goes to 500. You can top up the equity loan. So you've gone from 300 to 360 and then 90% of the 500 is 450. There's a $90,000 difference there. You keep the big bulk loan of the 300 the same. You would increase a 60K loan up by 90,000 to 150, which makes it 450 total debt, the 90% LVR on the $500,000 investment.
Great.
There was a little bit in there, guys. So if you just rewind, if you want to recap on that, if equity releases and whatnot's new to you, but that's essentially how you can equity release multiple times on the same property if the values increase.
So that 60 grand you were saying that we did the first time was used for one property.
Yep.
And then when we went back and did the extra $90,000, that was for an additional property.
Yeah.
So that's using the one property to buy another two more on the back of the equity because the property has grown.
Yes.
Now,
and the cool thing is as well, like you could split the asset up, you know, so the 60K could go into another bread and butter, but then the 90K could come out and you could probably roll into a manufactured cash flow deal at that point as well.
Now let's stick with those numbers, right? Trademarked
by Australian Property Scout, just to throw in there, guys. Yeah, sorry, mate.
let's stick with that. Now people are thinking, okay, I've got you. So the first was 300. We took out 60.
Yep.
So then 60 went to this property. Let's just call property A 300 grand.
Property one.
Property two
yep.
was what we used 60 grand.
Yep.
And then property three was the 90 grand.
90K.
But when we did property two with the 60 grand, where is the loan? Like who's servicing that extra 60 grand? I think people get confused with how that is apportioned.
Okay. So the way that I've always looked at it in this scenario, I've always looked at it as the whole portfolio needs to service itself. Like obviously each property needs to be standalone and be able to look after itself from one side of things. But then on the other side of it, like the whole portfolio has to complement each other. And that's what I was saying to you. Maybe when you do deal number three, you go and knock over at maybe a cash flow deal because it's going to help service all the additional debt. Because realistically, it's the quickest way to scale a portfolio by releasing equity. But you're also, you know, you're farming the equity and you're going through that in a pretty aggressive way as well. So you're going to have additional debt there that you're going to have to pay for. That's my idea of the best way. I would scale it into, if your serviceability was fine, into another bread and butter with the 60 and then the 90 I'd put towards a cash flow deal.
So, but in terms of property A,
yeah.
The debt is going to be associated with property A. So it's going to be go from 300
yep, to 360.
The repayments are going to go 360.
Yep.
And the payments are going to go to 450.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what people need to understand is when you do the property two, obviously you're going to get rental income from that, which is going to offset property A taking on more debt.
And that's why I think it's very smart and I guess wise. You should know this with your age, but it's quite wise to keep a very good overview of your entire portfolio and be adding in your different equity amounts as you're going through, especially in today's current interest rate environment.
Yep.
You really want to keep a good overview picture of it. But I mean, you know, right now, if you're stripping equity and you're building it, you're being quite aggressive in this manner, your portfolio is going to probably start running a little bit negative with the current interest rates. Hence why it's a good idea. Bang, let's bring a manufactured cash flow deal in here to supercharge the cash flows of the whole portfolio and allow it to be self-sufficient at that point as well.
Which comes back to the whole balanced portfolio and understanding the difference between the bread and butters and the manufactured cash flow, which we've spoken about a lot. I know we're going to dive a bit deeper into that. You've been teasing people for ages.
Yes.
Why do you do that? Why do you just you keep people at a distance? You're just saying, look, I'll do it. You're just like drip feeding them.
I don't know, mate. I like teasing you, but for the listeners, I'll deliver for the listeners, all right? I won't deliver for you. I've already delivered for you.
The bull shark, surely. Give us something.
I need some bait. You give me some bait. Oh, no one's given me good enough
early.
Bait yet.
It's early.
The burley's in the drink, but I'm not sniffing just
not,
yet.
Not yet. All right. It's early in the piece, folks.
It's coming.
Hold on to your hats. Hold on to your hats. All right. So obviously, I think the next question I really had in my mind was does that extra equity increase or decrease your serviceability? But just to re-emphasize that for people, it's obviously carrying more debt is going to tell us.
So the question is
does equity release or that you're taking increase or decrease your serviceability?
Okay, so this is probably the biggest question I get asked. And it actually really surprises me that people ask this one, but I guess it's probably because I've been doing it for so long. Mm. But a lot of people think when you release equity, it should increase your serviceability, right? Because you're pulling cash out. I kind of vaguely think maybe I thought that way back in the beginning. I can't remember. But like at the end of the day, you're releasing equity. You're taking on more debt, right? So every time you leverage, like we were saying before, like you do that twice, 60 and then the 90. Extra 90 to the 150, you're taking on extra $150,000 worth of debt that actually isn't producing an extra income because you're using it as deposits. So it 100% reduces serviceability, but it's all part of playing the game. It's all part of pulling these different levers and building the portfolio in this way. It's a cost of doing business in that sense. But yeah, in a nutshell, it definitely decreases serviceability because you're using it for deposits and you're taking on more debt. Mm-hmm. And just to be clear here as well, guys, any debt that you take on, unless it's producing like a above average return on everything that's associated with that cost. And you've got to remember it's buffer rates come into this too, right? So if we're talking a 5% interest rate and they're running currently 3% buffer rates, like serviceability buffer rates above that, it's affordability servicing, you're going to need to produce an 8% plus yield for that to actually add to your serviceability. And if you're not producing that, your serviceability will always decrease. But that is the only asset type that will increase. Essentially increase the serviceability or keep it as is. It probably won't even really increase it, but it'll keep it as is. Anything else will decrease serviceability. All debt decreases serviceability.
So that, I think that's a really important point. So at the base level, stripping it back, it is going to decrease your serviceability dependent on the deal you acquire. That may dictate a slight change, and that's why the balanced portfolio. I get that. Okay. Now, when you think about equity and releasing equity, what are the advantages, I suppose, the advantages and disadvantages of using equity?
The biggest advantage...
Or capital.
Did you just cut me off?
Yeah, I did.
Nah, sorry, yeah, go.
So, because people, I think people are thinking to themselves, and even I've thought about it too, is should I recycle equity?
Yeah.
Or should I just, if I've got the capital, should I just use the cash?
Okay, it always comes down to like how hard you want to push your portfolio. So like... yeah, there's a lot of people there, they have the cash, but like, I'm just going to put one deposit in and then I'm going to see how it goes. And that's great. Like, and especially with us, like I'm more than trusting of the fact of how well we buy property in terms of discounts and whatnot. And then that we're always buying in the right market because we were having a chat earlier about one of the properties we bought for you, 6 months ago and the gains it's had, right?
The gains.
But what I'm getting at with it is like, I'm very confident in terms of using that, but it's a slower process. So if you've got $100,000 to put in and we do one deal, or $70,000 or $80,000, whatever we put in one deal, but if you've got $150,000, $200,000 in the bank and you're wanting to build a portfolio quickly, you're wanting to put in as much as you can to really fire and take this journey off, right? But if you're wanting to go, I just want to do one property a year, you know, I'll put some money at the start. If I need to top it up a little bit in 12 months, then I will, but I kind of just want to mainly build it off one deposit. You can, but it's going to be slower. But if you want to scale the portfolio quickly and build it, you want to tip in as much as your own capital initially as you want or as you can to kind of fund those first few deals. And then you can start stripping capital and it will allow you to move quicker in that sense as well. So it's always a personal, I guess, risk profile in terms of how much of your money you want to put into the market. But man, most people are pretty ambitious. I think and I love our listener base and our audience base because most of our guys are pretty ambitious people that want to push things pretty hard. And yeah, man, it's... It's one of those things, you tip in more of your own capital, especially early on. It gives the portfolio and those early bread and butter sort of plays, those capital growth plays, it gives them more time to really start to compound that growth, which will start to self-fund the portfolio.
Yes.
I would always look to tip in as much as you can early and then start using
the equity. Obviously if you can, because if you can't, when you look at your portfolio, were you using mainly just the equity moving forward?
Well, I made like nothing, right? So my income was super, super low. So I had to use that to be able to build it. But man, even when I was making 35, 40 grand a year when I first started, I was still saving everything I could additionally to fund in and to feed these next deals. It's like you look at deal number one, I only pulled out 13 grand as an equity release because I was struggling with it with valuations at the time from that first property. I was really struggling on equity releases, but I was able to pull out 13 grand as my first ever equity release. That was enough for my deposit on the land. But then it was my savings. I had to save up for the second one for the build and finish the landscaping and everything, which is a cost intensive deal on your first deal when you have to go through everything like that. But yeah, man, like my first, if I've ever told you this, from when I was 20 to 27, 21 to 27, something like that, I didn't travel for 7 years.
I can probably tell with your demeanor.
But I didn't travel during that time frame because I was fully committed to this. And I'm not saying people need to have that level of commitment, right? But like if you are on a lower income and you really, really want this, but if you're going to go to Europe every year, good luck, mate. It's not going to happen. You have to fully commit to this thing. And I'm not saying 7 years. I was probably a bit crazy anal about it or whatever. But like that was how committed I was to it. But this is where you want to put in as much as you can. And even if you want to take a holiday every year, maybe go to Bali for the next 5 years every year instead of going to Europe, you know? So you're spending $3,000 on trip instead of 13. You know what I mean?
Like, or just go down to the Coogee Bay RSL or something.
Yeah, apparently they have really good desserts there. Just check what's in it before you eat it. But anyway, moving on from that one. But you know what I mean?
Like, but it's important what you were saying that you didn't take a holiday, right? Yeah. But then once you got your portfolio to the point that you had it, you were essentially, you replaced your income.
Yeah.
So And then you went traveled for how long? I don't know how you went.
I was over around about 18 month window. I traveled for about 10 to 12 months of an 18 month window.
So for people listening out there thinking, you know what, I deserve a break. And again, I think it comes back to, and no one should tell you what you should or shouldn't do. And no one's judging you on what you should and shouldn't do. But I think you just need to have that self-awareness to know, what do I actually really want?
Because
if you don't want to have that goal, then you can.
That's your choice. Yeah, but it's really comes down to how committed you are, how big you want to build it.
Yep.
What are you actually on? Mm. How much are you putting away? Like all those things come into it. And it's just all, no one is like has to be how crazy frugal I was during that period. But that's what I really wanted. Mm. And I made very, very low income. So I had to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's just all.
That's interesting. All part of it. I've actually found with my own portfolio recently, with the last few deals that I've done, just because.
Have you got some property?
Yeah, I've got a really good buyer's agent. I'll
hook me up.
I will. He's a really good, young, slick guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing like you. Oh, but nice. But I found because the banks are such, pains in the ass, really. Yeah. Let's face it. So I just found.
Let's not be unceremonious, mate. Get in there.
If I had the capital to do it,
yeah.
I just thought the velocity of wanting to do the deals at the pace that I wanted to do them at, it was just easier for me to contribute the capital.
Yeah.
That I, because I, through my business and through my earnings, I was able to do that. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to recycle the equity down the track once I get the properties that I want and then revisit it down the track. So it's really your own decision as to, because
100%. But you look at yours, right? And I know we're going to do your potty in a couple of weeks as well. But man, like you look at yours, you had, I think it was what, 250 or something that you came to me with, right?
So it fluctuated because I had some money in some business overseas, but it was around $300.
Okay, sweet. Because you came to me and you go, this is what I want to do. And if we'd done that at 80%, we might have, or if you'd held back a little and just gone, I just want to see one deal first.
Yeah.
We would have done one deal and you would have done really well out of it. But like how hard we pushed in those for four deals that we acquired in 10 months and then executed over the 18. Yep. But that 10 months, call it like a year, right? The year that we went hard, all those deals we acquired, like they doubled in like a 2-year time frame. If you'd just done one deal and waited to the end, it probably would have been a 9-10 month turnaround to finish the first deal, man, you would have had a great result on one, but then like how much opportunity 100%. Cost is on the table 100%. That you missed out. That's a great topic, opportunity cost.
I think opportunity cost is the number one thing.
Wow.
It is really, I think so, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I actually found with my deals, especially the first four deals that I did recycling the equity, using the capital that I had to get into the deals and then decide to use the equity down the track. Also, in terms of using cash, like when people think about cash and they're like, no, I'm going to hold on to cash. I want to hold it. I want to, reserve the cash. I don't want to spend it. You got to ask yourself opportunity cost. What is that money doing for you in the bank?
Yeah.
And that's what I decide. I think, well, if I'm going to keep the money in the bank, what is that? What is that actually doing for me?
Yeah,
if I'm an investor, what am I doing?
Mm.
So you might as well deploy your capital in addition to deploying your equity releases
100%.
As frequently as you can. And we can't give people advice, but that's what I do. I know that's what you do, because otherwise, what are you going to do? There's no use having 200 grand in the bank. Nah. What's that doing for you?
You got to put it to work. Like sitting it in there, like, all right, like 2 years ago or a year ago was a prime example where you were earning like literally 0.5% or a percent on your money. That was ludicrous, right? But even now, even at like 4%, or I don't even know what it's at, even if it's at 4%, but it's like such a low return. You're not leveraging it. You're just getting such an average return on it compared to what you could do if you went out there and put it in the market, instead. So,
and some people would be saying, well, if I've set it against my mortgage, then I might be saving 6%. But again, we have mentioned that before, but to explain to people, obviously, the difference of doing a deal than saving that little small portion of interest is insignificant.
Man. Yeah. You could, like, realistically, let's say your interest rate's, 5% on a primary residence mortgage. This is the crazy thing of like where leverage really comes into it, because you're going out there and you're buying, let's say you're putting $100,000, like it's 100 grand, right? Let's say you got 100 grand sitting there that you either do or don't use. Mm. So you're going to, that's 5 grand in interest, essentially having that 100,000 in there. But instead, you pull it out and you go put it into a property, let's just say at $500,000. All you need to do, if you buy that property 5% below market value, that's 25 grand. So you've just five times what you would have had in the bank in terms of what you bought it on the way in.
Just on the way in.
Then you got your rental return, and then you've got any capital growth you have in that market. If you buy in that market, it has a decent year, right? And does 10%. There's 50K on top of the 25 you made on the way in, you're at 75,000. I don't even know what the maths on that are.
Compared to five.
Compared to five. And then it compounds. And then what happens when you pull that equity back out and you roll it into another deal and you get the same return the next year on the new one, plus you've got the growth continuing on the one you've just bought compared to $5,000 sitting in the bank?
It's an absolute bonza.
Bonza. That's a cracker. That's a stonker.
That is an absolute cracker.
Thank you.
So if you're thinking about that, folks, and you're debating whether or not to keep your money in your offset, then do give it some serious consideration.
100%.
Which leads me to my point.
Mm.
Is there any disadvantages of using recycling equity?
Probably the only big one that comes to mind is your serviceability comes back a little, but that's all part of the game. We know that we plan for it and whatnot as well. But the only other big thing is like your cash flows come back a little bit, right? But again, if you're pulling $100,000 out and it's quite, you're at, 5% interest only, whatever, it's $5,000 a year for that $100,000.
Yes.
But what's the return that you're getting on that money instead? If you're pulling that out and you're putting, it's literally that exact scenario we just spoke about.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. That, you're going to increase your cost by that amount, but then by $5,000 a year, but it's literally that exact scenario I just gave about the primary residence. It's exactly the same thing, going and putting it out there in the market, getting a margin on the way in, getting your growth and getting your rental return. It's an absolute no-brainer when you compare it like that. So I've just turned a disadvantage again back into the advantage. So the only disadvantage-
He's always looking at the positive. He's a real positive sort of guy. Well,
that's literally the only thing, is a slight decrease in serviceability. Is a slight decrease in cash flow, like your cash flow coming back a little bit. Yep. The other crazy thing to think about is like, that's a loss, right? It's a loss of that $5,000. But if you're writing that off and you're claiming that little bit back anyway, let's say that property turns negative, it was neutral, and then it runs, now it's going to run $5,000 negative because you're going to pull that out. But you've gone and put it in the marketplace and then you're going to make $75,000 on that deal in that year. That $5,000 that you're losing, you write that off your tax, you're sitting at 30 cent tax rate, you're $1,500 back anyway. You know what I mean? So it's like, which I don't like going down that path, but if that's what you're doing to scale, then they're the advantages and that's what you have in your court to be able to be able to, outweigh that.
Now, getting back to that ad that you were too young to remember.
Can you remind me of that one? What was it? Yes, mate, or something.
Equity mate.
Because
people on these ads, and we won't name the bank, but they were doing these ads where a neighbor would see their next door neighbor with like this
boat or something, or whatever.
But they would say, well, how did you get that? Or how did you go on? And the guy said, equity mate. Yeah. So obviously, is there a disadvantage of using equity for anything that is non-
It's actually a bit of a plug, because it's a great ad, for being able to pull out and use it and-
Well, it's appealing to people's emotions.
So you're saying what not to use it for?
Well, I was saying, is there a disadvantage if you used it for something that wasn't producing any income, like a boat or a holiday or your engagement ring for your missus?
Yeah, so that's, or for your husband in your regard, but that's, I think, really big for-
No, there's anything wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that at all. I think that's the only thing people think, to be honest, man, in my mind, that is a low level person who thinks that, because they're thinking about, and that'd be primary residence.
Are you saying that the banks are low level people?
Maybe. But in that sense, you're not thinking of the highest and best use, right? Really go buying that sort of thing. In my opinion, you don't take on bad debt for that. You go buy that with profits when you go make some money on a deal, right? What I got sitting in the garage, bought that with profits, not debt.
Nissan Pulsar, you bought that with profits.
Triple S Pulsar, bro. I made $1,500 on a deal once and I bought it cash.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Look at the rims on it.
Man, spinners. Anyway, moving on.
You got that neon light underneath?
Two of them on each side. We don't want to go over speed bumps because it'll crack them. Anyway, so in that scenario, right? That's bad debt. So we go back to our bad debt scenario, which we don't want to get into and when we don't want to take on. You want to buy that shit, man, buy it with profits. Yes. Buy it with something you've made money on. Go and invest the money. I think the people listening to this, they're on that same wavelength of thinking that we are, that you should be putting your money into that stuff, into those assets that are going to give you results. So, I wouldn't be going and putting it into that stuff. You go pay for your, you go pay for that stuff with profits and with banked profit that you make on deals. I was the only brand new car I ever bought. This was back when I was 27, was when I sold my Wollongong unit. And it was the first reward I really had given myself when I went out and bought myself a 30 grand ute that, I was able to pay for in cash because I'd banked the profit and I went, and that was really what made me realize that that's the way it should be done. Yeah, man. But everything else, equity, you're pulling equity. The other thing too is you're pulling equity and you're putting it into something like that, it's non-tax deductible.
That's right.
So you just screwed yourself, right?
So not only are you reducing your serviceability, yeah. you're actually diminishing your whole net position.
100%. Whereas instead, if you're pulling it out and you're putting it into investments, that whole thing is tax deductible. It's a cost of doing business. It's an expense towards building your portfolio. Mm. You know, as much as people hate the Australian government and all the rest of the taxation office, blah, blah, blah.
You don't love Albanese.
Mate, this is what all this stuff is for, right? I can tell you obviously do. This is what all this stuff's for, right? It's for those tax deductions and whatnot. When you're stripping equity and you're pulling it all out, you might start and build and begin the portfolio in a higher LVR position, a higher debt position on the portfolio. Use these things to your advantage.
Yes.
You know, don't be silly. Don't pull it out. You know, oh, I just made 100 grand on a deal. I'm going to pull it out and I'm going to go buy a 100 grand Merc or something. Like
that. All right.
You'd be silly.
I think you've pretty much nailed the whole equity thing.
Thank you.
I was going to ask you, you know, should you use the maximum amount of equity available for you? That's probably my last little query. You got a property that's done really well.
Mm.
You bought it through a really good buyer's agent.
Mm.
Should you use the full amount of equity on the next deal?
If they're working with me and I know the quality of what we buy and the sort of assets we're putting people into, then yes, 100%.
Full amount.
Yeah. But it always comes into the scenario of what's the asset they've bought. So if we're talking about something that Australian Property Scout would source a client, then yes, I'm very confident in terms of everything around that.
Mm.
The yield would go, even like I was saying before, let's say saying it's neutral to slightly positive, pull 100 grand out, obviously that's a $5,000 a year expense, but you're able to carry it because of everything else you're doing within the portfolio. But if you'd gone and bought a shit property that is 10 or 15 grand a year negative, and then you go pull 100 grand out and it's turning into 20 grand a year negative or something like that, like a lot of these blue chip, you know, oh, yes. let's go blue chip and just strip all the equity and farm the equity and then, yeah, have fun when your interest rates roll off and you get smacked by that because that's going to hurt.
Oh, there's a bit of burly floating around now. Jeez, he was getting excited then, wasn't he? Did you see the twinkle in his eye?
Mate, I'm ready. But they're the scenarios where in those scenarios, I'd be running your numbers. Like, is it actually worth pulling out the equity? And this is where it always goes case by case. And like, I'll look at an investor's portfolio and go, all right, well, that market's peaked out. Like, why do you still want to hold that asset? Well, that market's peaking out. Why do you still want to hold that asset? You've got 200 grand in it, but it's running 15 grand a year negative. You pull 200 grand out, you're going to throw another $10,000 a year negative. That's 25 grand a year for that property. Can you afford to hold that? Most people can't. But then if they could sell it and if they could bank, and if that's 200 grand usable equity, there's probably another 100 grand in it of proper equity. If they could sell that, bank it, clear the debt, recycle that debt into two more assets and put the cash into them that now have great yields and great, you know, and we can put them in a better market that's now going to have its run for growth, velocity of money, that is always the best option and the best thing to do. But that's why it always comes down to like property by property, case by case, person by person. It's not a blanket, should I pull everything out? Yeah, pull everything out. But it's going to cripple me with cash flow.
Mm.
You always have to be really understanding the situation. And like I said, those other, you know, the person, the property.
He's getting a bit of momentum, isn't he? He's getting a bit of momentum. What?
It's a freight train. That takes a bit to pick up. But
he does take a bit to get going.
I'm a heavy bull shark. Sometimes mistaken for a great white, but the bully swimming in the shallows is the big one.
I love that one. Wow. That was a good one.
Face like full now, screwed up.
No, dude, I was actually quite surprised that you came up with something like that.
10 from 10. Are you at one yet?
However, when should you
take
the equity? Like, should you shouldn't do the equity release until you've found a deal? Or should you apply to get the equity out, have it sitting in your offset so you're ready to go? Or what does it matter at which point you do it? Because some people are thinking, well, when should I actually start the process?
When do you think?
I'm asking you.
I would personally
wait until I get the deal ready.
And that is why you are a level 3 investor and I'm a lot further along than that.
Well,
why would you wait? So then when the right deal comes along and you don't have your equity ready, how are you pulling the trigger on that deal?
Well,
equity takes time to release, takes time to go through the process. If you have it out and sitting in your offset, you're not actually paying anything on it because it's sitting in your offset, right? And you've got it there so you can pounce on deals. I always have a large amount of equity sitting in the offset, ready to go. A deal comes along, bang, I can pounce on it straight away.
What if you haven't, you're not
sorry for the rip, by
the way. No, the bull shark is thrashing a little bit.
I think you've got a side missing there.
Like. Yeah, I know, my wing's clipped.
He's got a torn pec and he's missing an arm. But
if the market is moving and you pull the equity out and it's in your offset account, but that you might not buy a property for at least a couple of months or a few months.
Yep.
and that market's moved a little bit more, you could theoretically have pulled more equity out to use.
That's all part of the game, man. But if you're pulling the equity and you're getting a pre-approval at the same time, you know, by the time that goes through, you're going to be more ready to buy than in 3 months when you pull it out again. You go through the process, pull it out. What if it's outpaced you again? Like, yeah, like that's all part of it. But if you can buy a property in that meantime that's also growing, and then in 6 months you're going back to property number one here and then pulling it out, it's continually moving. If you've got enough usable equity in there to pull out to buy a property, I wouldn't be waiting.
All right. Well, you've heard it from the big dog there. The bull shark has spoken. Get your equity. So are we saying to people out there, get your equity ready? Start looking at how much you've got. But when you buy a property, you don't just want to go 3 months later and get the equity. Like, at which point should you say it? 2 months, 3 months, one month?
It depends when you've got it. So most banks won't allow you to come back within 90 days. You normally need to go 90 days plus, right? I would always be assessing the portfolio. Something I always used to do quite aggressively, and I do it a fair bit with our clients as well, is like we'll do like 3-4 month check-ins. So we're checking in on the equity position of the portfolio. These are the guys that I know want to grow aggressively. Mm-hmm. So we'll check in every 3-4 months, assess the equity position, assess the values, because we obviously know what things are actually selling for and what they're going through for compared to what they're being listed at. Because a lot of the time agents don't disclose what things sell for on your normal platforms and whatnot. So we're able to kind of advise clients around that side of thing of when they have a certain amount of equity within the portfolio. But if you were, let's say you're, you know, out there having a crack and doing it yourself, then I would just be continually assessing the market and then assessing your portfolio. And again, be tracking everything, know what equity position you're in. You might have one market that outperforms others and you know, you might have had, a property in the last 12, you know, a year ago, you might have had one in Brizzy and one in Perth, and the Brizzy one had a couple of years, great run, but then it's kind of paused for 12 months, but then Perth might have done 20-25% for you. So, you know, you might not be able to tap Brizzy, but bang, here's Perth, we pull it out, bang, let's go. So, I'd be constantly assessing the portfolio and what you can do within that as well.
Well, there you have it, folks. Do we have a final verdict on the equity? Because I think you've pretty much nailed it.
Final verdict in any
summary or anything?
Yeah, like, I love equity, man. Yeah. Equity, like if I didn't have the ability to pull equity, I never would have built the portfolio I did anywhere near it. I would have completely struggled. I don't know if property would have been the route I went down because I needed to leverage. I needed to pull money that I'd made out of deals to stretch my capacity and the capital that I had to work with. It's something to embrace, you know, I really think it is. And when you're starting out, it's the same as LVRs and equity positions and all the rest of it. You want to embrace it. You want to utilize it. You want to put it to work. Yeah, it might feel a little uncomfortable when you're starting out and you're building on 90s, but I guarantee you, like, you buy the right properties in the right market, you know, I always say this, and the right price, you know, so you're making a bit of equity on the way in and you compound it and you build it and you work on it early in those first, you know, couple of years. It's going to take care of itself down the track. You're not going to need to keep buying at your 90s and stripping equity as hard, but it will compound and really take care of you in that front.
I think you've nailed it, Sammy boy.
Perfect, Jimmy.
Well done.
Mate, thank you very much. That's a good topic. I like this.
I think that was pretty good.
I hope we've answered everyone's questions as well, because we did get a lot of questions in about equity and how to use it and asking us essentially to explain equity. So Jimmy, mate, thanks for coming on, buddy. It was good.
It's good to see you.
Likewise, mate.
You look a bit grayer since. You're freshening in the shallows a little bit there.
Mate, I just did it to make you feel a bit more comfortable when you came up. I put a couple of streaks in. You know, I got some of the misses.
I like it.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I appreciate it. Guys, thank you very much once again for tuning in. It's been great having you on board. It's been great having the silver dog himself back in the studio. If you haven't left us a review yet, guys, please jump on and leave it. We've got plenty of good stuff coming in. We're really appreciating it. For all of you guys that have done it, thank you very much. For those of you that haven't, get on there and bloody leave us one. Now, guys, if you took a lot of value out of this today, if you know anyone that maybe has, you know, a big chunk of equity sitting in their home or one investment and they don't really know what to do, send this podcast to them. If your partner isn't really on board or doesn't really understand how to use this, send this to them. What you guys want to be doing is building your circle of influence. So the great thing about this podcast and what we're really trying to do is give back and give you guys as much information about how to do this stuff and build these portfolios. What you want to be doing is building that circle of influence so the people that are around you start talking the same language. Because the biggest thing I know about you, Jimmy, but the biggest thing I've always heard and so many clients have always told me is, man, I love getting on the phone and having a chat with you because I have no one to talk about this with. That's your own fault. Send this content to them. Get people start absorbing it. And really start growing that, because then you're going to have people you can start having high-level conversations with this sort of stuff about.
And if I can say, if you don't have any friends like that yet,
Jimmy's looking for a few friends, guys. DM him.
Please,
straight up.
Hit me up.
He wants some friends.
Hit me up.
Even if you don't have that much property knowledge.
Yes.
Send him the podcast.
Send me. I'd love to hear from you. But you might be the person that starts your circle of influence. 100%. You know what I mean? Because some people are thinking, I don't have anyone, but you could be the match that starts your circle of friends with your own mates.
That's a great point, Jimmy. Man, I've got mates. Like, it's funny, like back, especially when I used to play soccer.
Semi-professional.
At a good level.
Yeah.
My mates, I had so many mates that were there. And man, the only, like the boy, it's funny because like the boys that I have left, like that I'm still really close with, like they're guys that like really wanted to, and it's not even like, consciously that this has kind of happened, but like they got themselves into it and they asked me questions about, oh man, I'd love to, you know, and they've actually eventually kind of come on as clients and we've bought properties for them and stuff before as well. And man, like they're the guys we sit around at dinner and then we're just like, they were boys that never talked about property. We're always talking about soccer and whatnot. Right. And now like that's the topic conversation. Cause we'll get a bit more mature. Like we're wanting to achieve these different things and they're like, that different passion and motivation comes in around it. So guys, make sure you're trying to help build your own circle of influence, be it your parents, your siblings, your friends, whoever it is, guys, it really does help. And we know a lot of people the last couple of years have made a bit of equity out of property. So I'm sure there's a few people you guys can send this out to. But guys, thank you once again for tuning in. It's been another great episode. Jimmy, man, great to finally have you back up
here.
I'm going to get you out in the sun now, man. I need to get a bit of color on you. You look like a ghost over there. Black and ultimate black and white.
Yeah. You got any hair dye as well?
No, man. I got gray just to try and blend in with you, but I don't
think you
need
a few more on the next episode.
Guys, thanks again for listening to the Scouting Australia podcast powered by Australian Property Scout Buyers Agency. Until next week, guys, have a good one.